sunshine, a little over. Glimmer, glimmer, lead us less too far.
Good evening. You're tuned into KVNF's gardening show. It's As the Worm Turns. It's Tuesday evening. My name is Jill. That's my name. I'm here with Lance and Lulu and special guest tonight, Wind Clearwater.
Good evening, Jill.
Good evening. Good evening.
Lulu, Lance.
Mm-hmm. Good evening.
How do?
Hey, I'm just going to start off. We'll start off with you, Lance, and we're just going to say abundance, 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 huh?
Yes.
What is going on?
That's the thing right now, yeah.
Yeah. Harvest, harvest, harvest.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of good stuff going on. You're watering, going into your last watering. You're starting some fall cleanup.
Yeah. I'm watering the last time for popcorn or corn. I do field corn in general, but popcorn this year. And then the pintos I planted in July, I'm stopped watering those. They're doing really good. And I've stopped watering the potatoes.
Popcorn, pintos, potatoes.
Yeah. And
the harvest of peas.
That's
but
right.
Not peas, actually. Just pea things.
I didn't even notice that. And I'm starting the fall cleanup.
What is fall cleanup?
Well,
lots of work, it sounds like.
It's when you're too tired, but you still got to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
This is if you don't do the fall cleanup, this is where the weed seeds come in and the bugs that winter over.
Okay, so very important.
That becomes spring cleanup then if you don't
right.
do it now.
Yeah, yeah. And there's way much too much stuff to do in the spring.
Okay,
oh, gosh,
so
that's the truth. Yeah.
Get ready and don't let those bugs find a place to nest over the winter.
Yeah, so I'm actually still weeding.
Okay.
You know, lightly. Anything with seed heads, they're out
of
there.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Boy, you can really save yourself a lot of aggravation if you get rid of things that are going to seed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so don't give up yet. Keep weeding.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And winding down on the watering a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Lulu, you've got some wildcrafting going on. What's that in your garden?
Well, in my garden itself, I have currants that have been there since I have no idea when, but they're the truly old-fashioned black currants, and they have never ever failed to produce fruit. So currant is also wild, of course, in the backcountry everywhere. And so we've got those, and we've got a lot of elderberry, sambucus.
Ooh,
very
yummy.
Nice.
We need that for our winter health. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's remind our listeners, this is a call-in show, so you can call with your questions, comments, or tell us about your trophy garden, 527-4868 or 1-866-KVNF now. Let's bring Wind into the conversation. Wind, you are an expert on permaculture.
Well, that's what they tell me.
Well,
I try not to take expert because, you know, when anything related to gardening, it's difficult to be an expert. And I'm sure that Lulu and Lance can concur with that.
All of those every plant out there is trying to make a liar out of us.
That's right.
At any minute.
It's ever a learning process. As soon as we start thinking we're experts or master gardeners, that's
forget
exactly
it.
When the garden will rise up against you.
Yeah. That's right. Why I say persistence.
There you
persisting.
Go. Another P.
Yeah.
The theme. What is permaculture?
Well, permaculture is a design philosophy that observes patterns in nature and seeks to incorporate them to create more sustainable systems. I know that's a mouthful, but basically what it is, it's a way to approach designing land by working with nature and not against it. Oftentimes in the modern world, we kind of look at a piece of land and we say, oh, this is what I want here. And it's with permaculture, what we do is we go and we say, oh, what does the land offer us here? And
right.
How can I incorporate myself into the natural world instead of forcing the natural world to be what we want it to be? So it's a kind of a 180 degree perspective of approaching overall site design. This could apply to a backyard garden. It could apply to a farm. It could apply to a master plan community. It could apply to an entire city.
Right.
It's just how we look at the world.
And when you talk about systems, you're talking about systems of planting, of watering, of just that how the whole
pretty much every
piece
system
comes together
that we have. In life in general, this is our homes, this is our power systems, this is our watering systems, animals, And one of our principles in philosophy is to integrate and not segregate. So we bring our animals into the garden. We allow them to do work for us in the garden in a controlled environment so that we don't have to work so hard. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we have what's called a chicken tractor, which is basically a movable pen that allows the chickens to be outside. And you put them in the pen and you can move this pen around. And the chickens will do what chickens do, which is scratch the ground and eat bugs and seeds so they can help us get rid of the weeds. They can also kill a lot of the weeds by doing their scratching. And in addition to that, they're fertilizing the ground as well. So if we're real savvy, we can build these chicken tractors to fit right over our beds. Mm-hmm. And we put that down and we let the chickens cultivate the bed before we plant it. And then we can come in after them and prepare the bed and then plant our seeds.
I've seen those around town, and I've wondered. I just thought, that's a cute little, smart little chicken hut.
And they're
really
cute, Jill. They're adorable.
I think
you know, it always helps when your garden is cute. Yeah. But
we can do this with all kinds of animals. If we look at the archetype of the animal and what role it plays in nature, such as a pig is a rooter. It goes and it actually plows the ground. If you watch a pig in action... or goats, they eat the weeds, and sheep or cows. We can utilize these animals and let them do what they do. And then we bring them into the garden, and then we don't have to work so hard because as permaculturalists, we like to be lazy and lay in our hammock. This is the most important tool of the permaculturalist is the hammock.
Yep. There you go.
That's what I always say. I'm a really lazy gardener.
Yeah.
And my chickens get to do a lot of cleanup before I get in there for the final hurrah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I had a book that I read, and it was self-sufficiency on 5 acres. And they talked about the first, if you're breaking land, the first thing you put on it is pigs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And they had actually a series of animals. And at the end, it's actually cows, maybe horses, but it's cows and chickens throughout the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah, you know, digging up, cleaning up everything.
Well, the chickens are great because they'll spread out the cow pies for you, and they'll also eat the grubs and things that some of the insects
leftover
that are
seeds,
in,
everything.
And the maggots from fly larvae, things like that. So they actually will help to. They work with the cows. So in permaculture, we would actually do exactly that. You'd run the pigs through first. They break up the ground, bring in the cows behind them, and they would. Actually, the cows, you know, they put their big hoofs down, so they make these little pockets into the ground, and they also manure. And then when you blend the manure of pig, cow, and chicken all together, you have a nice, even, balanced manure. You know, there's a lot of carbon in the cow, and there's more nitrogen in the chicken.
Yeah.
So.
Balancing out the manure.
Balancing the poo.
Balancing the poo.
It's a very fine line.
527-486-8186 KVNF now. Give us a ring and tell us about water. We're always talking about watering, too much water, not enough water, and what kind of systems work in permaculture. All dependent on the land and what you have going there? Or?
Absolutely. You know, and around here, there's a lot of diversity in the water resource for everyone. So a lot of people use ditches. A lot of people have just hoses that they use and water the garden. I'm sure like Lulu does. Do you have a ditch?
We are on the ditch.
You do have irrigation.
Yeah, we have the Stewart ditch, but it comes down via gravity feed through pipes.
But there's a lot of water, if you think about it, that's actually wasted in our world just in gray water systems.
Oh, man.
You take a shower, and a very simple way to utilize that is just throw a 5-gallon bucket in the shower with you. So while you're showering, that water goes into your 5-gallon bucket, and then you can go out and you can just water it. Or if you do your dishes, you can do them in a basin in the sink.
There
and then you,
you
take that water and you take it outside and you pour it into your garden. You can pour it into your compost as well because the compost likes to be fed water. So there's also ways to integrate rainwater into your landscape that isn't even collecting it into barrels, which is one way of doing it. You can collect it into barrels and store it and then utilize that with a hose. But you can also dig swales from your downspouts and incorporate that water in through a little drainage swale that runs through your landscape. And then make that like a little dry riverbed. Make it look like a water creek so that when it's not raining, it actually brings that water element into your landscape. And then you, when it does rain, you've got your moist-loving plants that are growing along there, such as asparagus or maybe strawberries or some mints or something like that, because they're going to gain a little bit of a little extra water there.
That's a great way to do it. And you can also follow the contours of the land that way, too. I remember watching this Australian film on permaculture and forest gardening, and it was a remarkable what they did, because they used the swales of the land, the natural movement and form of the land, and said, okay, this is going to collect more water. We'll do our big upper story trees here, our understories there. And boy, did it was amazing.
It's fascinating. Actually, Jeff Lawton did a whole project in Australia on this. It's called Greening the Desert.
Yeah.
And basically what they did was they dug what's called keyline swales, which are on the contour. And you have all kinds of different tools to find the contour. Basic A-frame level or a laser level are two different ways of doing it. And in that, they would dig the soil out of the swale and make a berm. So they collected all the extra rainwater into this, and they mulched it real heavily. And then they planted right in the swales some pioneer plants, plants that are really strong that don't need a lot of water. And what those would do would create a lot of shade and keep the wind down. And in addition to that, they drop a lot of their leaves, so they create a nice layer of mulch on the ground every year. Swales are also great for collecting the mulch. So they collect the water, and they, if you go into a place where there is a lot of swales, you'll see that the leaves will naturally settle there.
Sure.
So once again, you get more hammock time, right? Because you, the
you
swales
have to
are
break
doing
leaves.
Yeah, you don't have to rake leaves. Exactly. So that's a great video, and Jeff Lawton has that on the internet if anyone's interested in checking that out. It's fascinating. And he actually went to a place where they said, "Oh, you could never
grow anything."
You
can never do this. Yeah.
And they grew food there.
Yeah.
It took several years the pioneer plants came in, and then they would cull the pioneer plants out after they had planted some of the things that were desirable that they wanted. In this place, it was a subtropical, so I think they had, you know, acacia growing and probably some avocados and various types of trees.
Is that bioremediation?
That would be considered bioremediation.
Yeah.
Wow, impressive, Jill. Big brain.
I've learned a lot on this show.
And another thing to use in there would actually be fungus. You'd use oyster mushrooms and plant those because they actually help to – they act as a sponge in the soil, the mycelium does. And it actually helps to bring nutrients into the plants as well. So you touch into that kingdom as well, not just be in the plant kingdom. Incorporate all that stuff, and all of a sudden in 5 years – especially in a subtropical area, maybe it'd be 10 years here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the same principle applies. We can still do that here.
Yeah.
Which, and there's a lot of land around here that you see that, you know, could you really use that?
Sounds super smart to me. And you've designed some permaculture gardens areas around the North Fork and all over. And you guys, Lance Wind, you were talking one about earlier out at the orchard.
Yeah, delicious orchards. I was just curious in how that did for you this year.
It's fabulous, actually. Jeff, just want to give a shout out to him because he's just been really supportive in the whole project. And I had this vision a few years ago because I've been driving around the North Fork Valley and realizing how many hundreds of acres of irrigated land there are that's growing trees. Well, fantastic. We've got fruit everywhere. But what's growing on the ground is a lot of weeds.
Right. Yeah.
So this is a problem. And in permaculture, we always look and say, well, we can take a problem and turn it into a solution. One thing under a lot of these trees, a lot of the weeds are actually medicinal plants. We've got dandelion or chicory growing, different types of things that we can actually harvest already. And so what we did last fall and early in the spring this year was we went out and did a dandelion harvest. And when we did the dandelion harvest, we planted peppermint under the peach trees. It's already being irrigated. So the peppermint actually enjoys the part shade environment.
Uh-huh.
And Jeff has a whole new block of peaches out there. So we're incorporating these mints and different types of tea herbs that like that part shade environment. We have comfrey, lemon balm, spearmint, and peppermint growing now. Next year, I'm going to begin incorporating some other things like the anise hyssop and some hyssop. and probably some skullcap and various other types of mint family herbs. Mm-hmm. But we could also do this with culinary herbs as well, oregano and thyme. We can grow chives under there. We could grow garlic chives. And all of these, this becomes another value-added product for an orchardist. So a lot of times around here, the peaches get frosted out, or the cherries, and there's no harvest. However, the orchardist has to continue to irrigate and prune and weed under the trees.
And insect control.
Insect control, exactly.
Right.
And so by taking these herbs and planting them underneath, it assures the orchardist that they're going to get at least something. And the years that they get peaches and the other herbs.
Right.
In addition to that, we've also gone around the perimeter and we're starting to plant the edible berry bushes, currants, gooseberries, choke cherries, service berries, elderberries, things like that as a windbreak on the west side of the orchard, because once again, in the springtime, we have these cold winds come in. So by blocking that, Jeff will actually burn barrels of wood out there. We'll help to trap that warm air in the orchard itself. So this is called forest gardening, or polyculture. So we're trying to set up an educational and also a more economically viable field out there by incorporating all these plants into the orchard. It's pretty and in addition to that, I have to mention this as well. It's bee food.
That's what I was going to say.
There you go.
It's food
absolutely.
For the bees, because the mint is flowering right now.
Yeah, and they're all over it.
So if we plant things that flower in succession throughout the year, because a lot of times, and people probably don't know this, but a lot of bees are actually shipped in here. Uh-huh. You know, they come from California because they use the bees to pollinate the almond trees, and then they shrink wrap them and put them on semis and drive them out. And then they put them, because the almonds bloom way before our trees, put them out here. We lose a lot of the bees. The bees are disoriented. And so then they pollinate our trees. But then there's no food, or it's hard to find food for them. So by doing this and putting things like red clover under there and stuff, we have these plants that are blooming throughout the year. The bees will stay. So the next level of this is to actually have bee boxes in every single orchard too. Mm-hmm. Now, someone might say, that's a lot of work for an orchardist. But the philosophy here is actually that we don't have just the orchardist doing it. We have a honey person that goes from orchard to orchard and does the honey. We have an herb grower that grows from orchard to orchard and grows the mints. We have the orchardist. We have somebody that maintains the berry bushes. And they go around, and that's their job. So they're the expert in that field. So instead of having just a farm that grows one thing, we have farmers that go around. And this creates community as well amongst the people. We're all working together.
Nice. I like it. And I like the thing about the bees, because I have a nice little second year permaculture garden going in my yard, and I've definitely noticed that, just bees all year round.
You have a lovely landscape.
I do. It's very lush and really looking good right now. Hey, we're just going to sidetrack for a minute, because we have a caller on the line that has a question about guests. Tomatoes. Caller, are you there?
Yep.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm here. Hi. Let me just quick comment on bees. I have a little thyme garden and one of those peppermint plants, and in between the two is a bird bath. And what I've noticed this year is that is one tremendous all year long bee collector. I have bees in the bird bath all the time, and even today, it was wasps coming to take a drink. So don't forget a little water for the bees, too. My question was about tomatoes, and up here at 7,000 feet, we're racing against the first frost, and I saw my tomatoes flowering and doing a lot of setting of teeny tiny tomatoes that I knew weren't going to make it. So I took the initiative to prune my tomatoes back, taking those flowers off to see if it wouldn't get more sunlight and more energy into the tomatoes that are there. Is that smart or dumb?
That's the smartest thing you've done all summer.
Yeah. Aside from put the water out there for the bees, that was brilliant.
You're like a
born permaculturalist.
Yeah,
for sure.
You got it. You brutalized your tomato plant. It doesn't get any better than that.
Lulu loves that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to hear what y'all's opinion was, and it's a good show, and I'm glad to hear it. And keep up the good fun. All right.
Well, thanks so much for calling.
Yeah. Keep it up.
You bet.
Yeah, bye. We're all racing on those tomatoes. I mean, mm-hmm. my tomatoes are big and fat, and they are bright and green.
Well, a few more weeks of weather like today, and you'll see them ripening up.
Yeah.
I
mean, mm-hmm.
We had that little cool spell there, and everything kind of shut down for about a week, rain. But today was hot.
I talked to my friend in Gunnison. It was 34 yesterday morning.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good reason not to live in Gunnison.
Yeah.
But we did have that moisture, and Lulu, you were saying you have morels coming out even in the gravel.
That's
in
right.
Your yard.
Wildcrafting, yeah.
Really?
We have morels in the back.
That's
coming
normally
in the back.
A spring mushroom.
Well,
that's
right? I mean, and they're go figure.
Yeah.
Well, naturally, it's back. Bass backwards. That's how everything in my life works, you know. So here are these morels. Just we got a bunch of them, and we cooked them up, and they weren't all that tasty. I can't figure quite why, but they were true morels. They mm-hmm. weren't the false morels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not their most. Why are you there? Is what I want to know.
I don't know. What you have all kinds of crazy stuff happening in your garden.
Oh,
I
my
love
God.
It.
I do.
New.
And then there's other mushrooms that have come around in another part of the garden that are these really cool but very deadly. And then there's another two other groups out in the front that are those orange chicken. What are they called? Hens of the forest.
Chicken of the forest.
Chicken of the forest.
Yeah. They're in your front yard, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, underneath the roses and in the myrtle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't have any lawn except in the back. I have a small patch, but most of my garden is, or my front yard is, hammock yard. It's so easy. It's crazy.
And Lance, you're counting down lawn mowing. Are you down to what? Six.
Six. Six more mows and counting.
Yeah.
I love it.
And you can have a lawn with the permaculture designed landscape, right?
I have some lawns in my garden throughout. Mm-hmm. I have a little lawn for yoga, just little patches of grass. It's great because permaculture is actually wants to invite people into the garden.
Right.
It's not only about food production. It's actually about blending ourselves in. So by making little spaces, small flagstone benches, little lawns, hammocks, it encourages people to want to come be there. And in a forest garden, which is what we do in permaculture, it's a beautiful space. There's always something blooming. It's really spectacular. And you can just forage. It's just a foraging playground. You just go out and you eat whatever fruit is mm-hmm. happening at the time. You know, when the gooseberries are coming on in July, that's what I'm eating, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really great. Right now I'm eating apples. I'm eating spectacular apples, and I'm mm-hmm. pulling some pears that are the kind that you don't eat off the tree. You know, the Bartlett's you like to set on the counter for about a week, and then they turn yellow.
Yeah.
And then they're prime, you know?
I love the fruit coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, you've got the bee thing going, but you also attract or develop habitat for other creatures, maybe birds and butterflies
Absolutely.
And all that kind of good stuff.
And we keep a balance in it in permaculture. You know, it's completely organic. We don't necessarily say, oh, there's bad bugs or good bugs, because the bugs that might seem like they're not great are the ones that are feeding the good ones. Aphids are feeding the ladybugs. We want to encourage them. So a few aphids are not a bad thing because they're keeping our beneficials alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, certain things can get out of hand, like grasshoppers, which we've had a lot of people have had a lot in this year. But that's just an opportunity to bring turkeys in and allow them mm-hmm. to eat some of the grasshoppers. And then we eat the grasshoppers via the turkey at Thanksgiving, right?
I wish I had a big truck that I could just take around with about 100 turkeys on it.
Exactly.
Oh, that would be a great
See, that's a job for someone. Turkey farmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, set up an electric fence.
Right.
Right? And turn them loose.
Or you could have a movable turkey coop. You know, you can train them like a chicken
there
to come back in at night. So if you get them young and you get them trained to go back into the coop, what you do is you just have like a sheep wagon kind of thing, you know, and you just turn it into a and you just drive that around to different properties and let the turkeys loose, and then they'll just naturally go back in the evening,
in.
You know?
Yeah, wow. And they don't tear up the garden. I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You could actually, I was thinking you could, like, get some of that electric fence, right, and put it along one side of the garden, and then you could get all the beaters, all your friends to come over and whip all of the grasshoppers towards the turkeys, you know, like you
right.
do.
Right, exactly. Like you corral hunting, them, right? You know, yes. Rustle them up, Lulu.
Get them in there, buddy.
That sounds like a blast.
Okay. Grasshopper poking.
Yeah.
It's like cow poking. Hopper boy, you call them. Not cowboy, right?
I always thought it would be great to have a ranch and name it the Tethered Turkey.
The Tethered Turkey. How do you do that? With the leg or like a little leash around the neck?
No, on their leg. And it would be so fun. And they could just go around and eat your grasshoppers, right?
There you go. Boy, they'd be fat turkeys by the time Thanksgiving rolled around.
Oh, yeah. Get them out of the truck. All right, come on. This turkey's kind of hard to load. You know. And then they go and they work it over.
Yeah, Rot
okay,
pilgrim.
Never mind.
See, well, this kind of goes back to the whole orchard idea and kind of what Lance was talking about is putting the pigs out. This is another opportunity for economy in the valley here. If somebody could figure out a way to bring pigs into the orchard, remove all the grass, because that's the biggest problem with this whole polyculture system is that there's grass, and grass is, we all know, the biggest weed there
ever.
Is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if we can get the pigs in there, protect the trees, and have a pig tractor and move that through the orchard and have them tear up all the grass and then come behind them and plant. This is another element that's also an opportunity for somebody who wants to herd pigs around from orchard to orchard and move them through.
Right. I was talking to one of the old timers here. They had 80 acres of orchard on the corner of my road, Luru Creek Road, and the highway. And she said when they bought that place, it was all still in standard trees at that time. And that's the full size, not the semi-dwarfs or dwarfs. And her and her girlfriends, the first year, picked 80 bushels of asparagus.
Oh, my
nice.
God.
And at that time, they thought the asparagus was competing with the trees. So the farmers fruit growers started chopping it out. And it's like, you guys, you just got a crop.
Right.
For nothing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was just there.
Well, that's one of the things is along all the ditches, Delicious also will be planting asparagus. And what a brilliant crop, right? Because it's the first vegetable.
Yeah.
And it goes for a lot of money if you're selling it.
Uh-huh.
So it's a great opportunity for the orchardist to get a little bit of early season cash flow by having, you could pull hundreds of pounds of asparagus with all the ditches around. And it's already growing wild.
Oh, yeah.
So why not plant it?
Why not plant it? Yeah,
right?
It's like 70-80% of the asparagus in the United States is imported.
Wow.
Which is silly. Yeah. I eat it fresh off my land.
Yeah.
Like I've got patches in different spots, and because of the different microclimates, it comes up at different times. The south-facing hillsides next to springs, it's coming on early in, you know, April. And then by, you know, May, down in my garden, I've got that purple Jersey Giant. That's just the sweetest stuff you'll ever want to eat. It's incredible. You know, so
I'm going to put some in up at Phil's new place.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a swath of it going and
a
row.
Plant asparagus everywhere, every ditch around. Just find a crown and stick it in.
Stick it in, yeah.
That's the tip of the night. Hey, we've got someone else on the line, David. Another question, and we're running short here, David, but let us know. What do you got about tomatoes and their spots?
Uh-oh.
Hi, great. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
Right. As soon as they're turning red, and sometimes even orange, they're getting a tan spot on the very bottom, and then it's kind of growing into a brown, bigger spot as they get more ripe. We had a few cold nights. I don't know if that's it or what.
No.
That's a little blossom end rot, I call it.
And we've had
good
many
old blossom end rot.
Yeah,
that's two things, uneven watering and a calcium imbalance.
Uneven water. I guess there's nothing you can do about it now.
Well, you could get, just to do the calcium, you can get gypsum. Gypsum.
What about, I have a little calcium magnesium in a liquid.
That's another product that has them balanced out because calcium works with magnesium.
Great.
And try to keep them a little dry even, I would. Wouldn't you, Lance,
at this
point?
Yeah. Keep them on a little bit.
Too much water will bring that on more.
Thanks very much, guys. Appreciate the show.
Thanks for listening.
Sure.
Thanks, David. All right. Well, that was just very enlightening. Thank you, Wynn, for being here. And, of course,
my pleasure.
Lance
Thanks
and
for having
Lulu.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
That is
yep.
fun.
And remember, we've got an email out there. It's worm@kvnf.org if you're thinking about something during the week and you want our experts to answer. And otherwise, we will be back next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Thanks, everyone. Have fun in your garden, in your hammock.
Happy hammocking.
Bye-bye.
Who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so. The whole little, oh, and the whole.